Now, promise me you'll go right off to sleep because Daddy has got to go out on some very important business.
But Dad, read me a story first, please.
Yeah, well, no, it'll have to be a quick one, then.
All right, Daddy.
All right, then. Well, once upon a time...
Oh, I know that one.
Oh, do you?
Yes.
Well, this is a different once upon a time.
Oh.
Once upon a time, there were three bears.
Why?
There was a father bear, close your eyes, mother bear and baby bear.
They only have one baby.
Yes, they only had one baby.
Why?
Just like us, only one baby.
Huh.
Now then, Father Bear and the Mummy Bear made some porridge, and it was too hot, so they decided to go out and let it cool down.
Why?
Because it was too hot. Now, just try to go to sleep, because Dada is pushing against time at important business, you know, and you're a big girl now. Anyway, along came Goldilocks.
Do you like Mummy?
Yeah. Well, of course I like Mummy.
Why?
Because she's Mummy. You see? Anyway, Goldilocks.
Well, the little boy at school called Edward, he's got a Mummy too.
Yes.
Do you like her then?
No, I like Mummy because, well, we're married. We have to like each other.
Well, if I married you... Yeah, I have to like you.
No, you couldn't marry me because I'm your father. Anyway, Goldilocks.
Who's Goldilocks?
Goldilocks, she's a girl from... She's in the forest. And she came across this beautiful hut. And she said, oh,
why?
I must go. Oh, because...
Well, why was there a hut in the forest?
It was a house where the three bears lived. And they gone out, remember?
I never heard of bears living in houses.
No, I'm sure you didn't. Look, now, time is getting on. You should be asleep
Daddy,
hours ago. What?
Why have you got a big nose?
Well, it's not ultra big. It's not... Because...
Well, will I have a big nose when I grow up?
You will in a minute before you grow up. I'm sorry. No, I didn't. No. Here's a shilling. Look, put it under your pillow, and in the morning there'll be a tooth. Now, the three bears, now, they all went, came back, and she'd eaten. She'd eaten, and she'd broken the chair, and she was upstairs in bed.
Why did she break the chair?
Because she sat on it.
Was she naughty, then?
She wasn't naughty. Oh, look at the time. You should be asleep hours ago, you know. Well, anyway, back came the three bears, and they said, oh, who's been sitting on my chair?
Was that Goldilocks that was sitting on her chair, then?
Yes, now, can't you think it?
Were they angry with her, then?
They weren't angry. No, they were just
playful.
But
why
playful.
Did she go in the house?
Because it was raining.
In the wood?
In the wood.
But couldn't she have stood under a tree or
she
something?
She could have sat under a tree. I wish she had now. But anyway, she went up. And, of course, her father was a woodman, and he came back and he chopped off all the reds, and she lived happily ever after.
Oh.
Now then, you must try to go to sleep now.
Yes, but if he chopped off all the heads, they couldn't live happily ever after.
Oh, they could. They lived separately.
Oh. Hello again, kiddies. It's your old Uncle Steve with another Bebop's fable. Once upon a time in the land of Ulyabatku, there lived a very vain queen with a beautiful stepchild named Snow White. The queen was in the habit of looking into her magic mirror and saying, "Mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the fairest one of all?" And the mirror would always answer, "You are the fairest one of all." And in New Jersey, the number to call is Piccolo 96402, and there never was a doll like you. Well, sir, all went well until one day when Snow White reached maturity. And then the mirror said to the queen, "Your beauty does deserve my praise, but Snow White cuts you 16 ways." Well, at this, the queen became furious, and calling a servant, she told him to take Snow White out into the forest and abandon her, and this the servant did. Snow White was, naturally, very much afraid. But at last, she came to a strange little house, and finding no one home, she entered. Inside, there were seven little beds. "Wow," said Snow White, "a flop house." And so saying, she lay down upon one of the beds and fell fast asleep. The mysterious house, of course, was the home of the seven little dwarfs, a small progressive combo who made SP records on the midget label. Late that night, they all came home from the session and opened the door. "Hey," said the first little dwarf, "looks like the Morris office sent us a canary." Hearing voices, Snow White woke up and apologized for having imposed on the dwarf's hospitality. "Mama," said the first little dwarf, "relax. Like you to meet the boys. This is Theolonius, and here's Louie, Woody, Benny, Cootie, and the Duke. "Skin man," said Snow White. "My name is Snow White Clyde, and I'm currently being put down by my stepmother, who's a real drag, if you dig what I mean." "I'm hip," said Dizzy. "Baby, you can make it here as long as you like." Meanwhile, the queen, thinking Snow White had perished, said to the mirror, "Mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the fairest one of all?" The mirror answered, "Queenie, you're a doll from coast to coast, but Snow White's face is still the most." Furious, the queen disguised herself as a witch and went out into the woods to look for Snow White. At last she came to the house of the dwarfs and knocked upon the door. "Who called?" said Snow White. "It's only an old lady selling apples," said the queen. "Sorry," said Snow White, "it's after hours." But after a moment she relented, opened the door, and bought an apple from what she thought was a poor old lady. The apple, of course, was poisoned, and as soon as she had taken a bite of it, she fell into a deep sleep. When the dwarfs came home and found Snow White on the floor, Cootie said, "Hey, man, the chick has passed out. What's she on?" "Don't come on so square," said Theolonius. "This crazy mixed-up kid looks like she's not long for this bit." And sure enough, Snow White's pulse had dropped from 78 to 45 to 33 and a third. And it looked as if she were planning to be very cool permanently. She lay in a coma for many months, but then one day, a handsome prince visited the dwarves and demanded to see her. He bent low over her, took her by the hand, and the strength of his love made her eyelids flutter happily. At that very moment, the evil queen was looking into her mirror, saying confidently, "Mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the fairest one of all?" Imagine her surprise when the mirror said, "Queenie, I really hate to do it, but the Snow White bit, I think you blew it. You've flipped your lid, you've swung, you've bopped, but still, that Snow White has you topped."
Back in 1937, on a cold, frosty morn, in a little four-room farmhouse was a baby boy born. Had his parents known the grief and shame this child would bring to them, they would have traded with the devil for a child to replace him. But of course they couldn't know what kind of monster was their child. As a baby he was normal, though his eyes were bleak and wild. And until his seventh birthday he'd done nothing really wrong. Then he killed his little sister with a broken pitchfork prong. As his sister lay there dying in the awful crimson flood, he noticed how his hands and arms were stained with drops of blood. Well, he couldn't face his mother, couldn't tell her what he'd done, so he crept into the house and got his father's old shotgun. Now, the gun was always loaded with a heavy powder charge. It was used to kill the vicious beast that roamed the hills at large. When the boy's mother happened to step out the kitchen door, he pressed down upon the trigger, and his mother lived no more. With the echo of the shotgun blast still ringing in his ears, little killer watched his father find his mother and shed tears. He crept up behind his father with a razor-sharpened axe, just like Lizzie Borden gave his father 40 whacks. To this day, no one has seen that little monster anywhere. It's known he's still about. He's left a body here and there. And although it isn't likely it could ever happen to you, if you find a dead man, just remember, I can kill you too.
The devil walked into Lime Balls on a rainy Nashville night, while the lost souls sat and sipped their soup in the sickly neon light. And the devil, he looked around the room and got out on his knees. He says, "Is there one among you scum who rolled the dice with me?" Well, Reddy just strums his guitar, pretending not to hear. And Eddie, he just looks away and sips on his beer. Vince, he says, "Not me, I'll pass. I've had my share of hell." He kept scribbling on a napkin some songs he thought would sell. Ronnie just kept whispering low to the snuff queen clutching his sleeve. Somebody coughed and the devil scoffed and turned on his heel to leave. Hold on, says a voice from the back of the room before you walk out that door. If you're looking for some action, friend, well, I've rolled them dice before. And there stood Billy Markham. He's been on the scene for years, singing all of them raunchy songs that the town didn't want to hear. He'd been cut and bled a thousand times, and his eyes were wise and sad. All his songs were the songs of the street, and all his luck was bad. I know you, says Billy Markham, from many a dark and funky place, but you always spoke in a different voice and wore a different face. Me, I've gambled here on Music Row with hustlers and with whores, and hell, I ain't afraid to roll them devilish dice of yours. Well, then get down, says the devil, just as if you was gonna pray, and take those dice in your luckless hands and I'll tell you how the game is played. You one roll and you bet your soul, and you roll 13, you win. And all the joys of flesh and gold are yours to touch and spend. But if that 13 don't come up, then you can kiss your ass goodbye and will your useless bones to God, cause you got them souls in mind. 13, says Billy, hell, I played in tougher games. I've loved ambitious women, and I've rode on wheelless trains. So give me room, you stinking fiend, and let it all unwind. Nobody's ever rolled a 13 yet, but this just might be the time. Then Billy Markham, he takes the dice, and the dice feels heavy as stones. They should, the devil says, cause they're carved from Jesus' bones. And Billy Markham, he turns the dice, and the dice, they have no spots. I'm sorry, says the devil, but they're the only dice I got. Well, shit, says Billy Markham, now I really don't mean bitch, but I never thought I'd stake my role in a sucker's game like this. Well, then walk off, says the devil. Nobody's tied you down. Walk off where, says Billy Markham. It's the only game in town. But I just want to say before I make my play that if I should chance to lose, well, I will my guitar to some would-be star who will play some honest blues, who ain't afraid to sing the words like damn or shit or fuck, and who ain't afraid to put his ass on stage where he makes his bucks. But if he plays his guitar safe and sings some sugary lies, I'll haunt him till we meet in hell. Now give me that fucking dice. Billy Martin shakes the dice and yells, come on, 13. And the dice they roll and they come up blank, you lose the devil's grave. Oh, but I must say before we go our way that I really like your style. Of all the fools I've played and beat, you're the first one who lost with a smile. Well, I'll tell you something, Billy Markham says, those odds weren't too damn bad. Damn, 14 years on Music Row, that's the best damn chance I've had. Then arm in arm, Billy Markham and the devil walk out through Limeball's door, leaving Billy's old beat-up guitar there on the floor. And if you go into Limeball's now, you can see it there today, hanging from a nail on the wall of peeling gray. Billy Markham's old guitar that nobody dares to play. listen to the story of Nathan McCoy. Now, Nathan McCoy was a Texan. He was born when the West was young. And by the age of 5, he was learning how to quickly draw a gun. Because Nathan McCoy was a Texan, and his daddy was a Ranger man. So he taught his only son the rhythm of a gun in this untamed western land. Young Nathan did grow into manhood, and the fame of his guns grew wide. Why, there wasn't a gunslinger living who could draw and stay alive, because Nathan McCoy was a master in the art of trigonometry. So he quit his college course for pistols on a horse and a bounty hunter's fee. Nathan McCoy, Nathan McCoy, the deadly guns of Nathan McCoy. How beautiful girl was Dolores, and his one only love was she. They'd bonded their hearts to each other in a dream that could not be. Cause Nathan McCoy was a hunter, and he chased his quarry far and wide. With a price upon their head, standing up or dead, there were many men that died. Now the bounties did grow ever larger, so McCoy bought a house and land, and more cattle he added. For his marriage, he had planned. The tragedy now was approaching. It would change their many happy plans. Cause the largest bounty yet, he said, I've got to get. And Rodriguez is my man. Nathan McCoy, Nathan McCoy, the many deadly guns of Nathan. Now, Rodriguez was wanted for rustling, but a sly, sneaking rogue was he. He had always wanted Dolores, and he burned with jealousy. So $10,000 he offered, and he guaranteed it would be paid to the feller throwing lead who'd bring in Nathan dead. It was gunman's big parade. All hell busted loose in El Paso, for the trap had been surely set. With hunters and savage Rodriguez, plus a fortune to be met. For Nathan, the odds were against him, though the thunder of his guns belied. As he shot Rodriguez dead, he staggered full of lead, and collapsed face down and died. Nathan McCoy, Nathan McCoy, now you've heard the story of Nathan McCoy.
Now, Miss Nancy Ann ran a boarding house with a faded sign that read, "Single rooms for single girls, no men allowed," it said. But rumor had it that a gentleman with a yen for love for a fee could always go to Nancy Ann's for some feminine company. Well, one night in June in the billiard room, I was chalking up with a friend. He was set to break when the door burst open and Leo James rushed in. He yelled, "There's a fire that's just broke out, and it's down at Nancy Ann's." So we dropped our cues on the pool room floor and into the street we ran. Though the flames were hot and the smoke was thick, not a single life was lost, and the reason for the blaze was never found. But it long will be remembered in our local history as the fire that fairly scandalized the town. The night Miss Nancy Ann's hotel for single girls burned down. When we got to the place, the front was ablaze, and so was the second floor. So we cut around the side and up the alley and stop beside the back door. We were catching our breath when the door flew open and knocked poor Leo flat. And out through the smoke ran Mayor Wills wearing nothing but a black silk hat. And right behind him with his shirt tail afire came the local chief of police. And Banker Jones with a red-haired girl he always called his niece. Then I spied Miss Nancy Ann herself helping someone out of the fire. Her arm around the red bald head of old Judge McIntyre. A deacon, a dentist, a deputy sheriff, and one state congressman. The county physician, the city mortician, out through the flames they ran. A grand parade of girls in gowns and half-clad gentlemen. Through thick gray smoke that sweetly smelled of French perfume and gin. Though the flames were hot and the smoke was thick, not a single life was lost. And the reason for the blaze was never found. But it long will be remembered in our local history as the fire that fairly scandalized the town. The night Miss Nancy Ann's hotel for single girls burned down. Now everybody was out of the girls' hotel by the time the roof caved in. And we were heading back to the billiard hall when Leo turned to my friend. He said, I believe that's the funniest show I've ever seen in town. The so-called elite caught out in the street with their pompous purity down. Though the flames were hot and the smoke was thick, not a single life was lost. And the reason for the blaze was never found. But it alone will be remembered in our local history as the fire that fairly scandalized the town. The night Miss Nancy Ann's hotel for single girls burned down.
Down in old Savannah lived a fella named Joe. He used to run an eating place where ladies loved to go. Down in Savannah, Joe was known for miles and miles around, because old Joe had the biggest joint in town. Lucky old Joe had the biggest joint in town. Mothers brought their daughters in to sample Joe's dessert. The daughters just adored it, and they sampled till it hurt. One day a gal apologized for eating like a pig. That's fine, said Joe, that's what made the joint so big. Lucky old Joe had the biggest joint in town. Soon Joe was rich. He wore a diamond twice as big as a rock. But still old Joe wasn't satisfied with his life. He wanted to enlarge, so he began to advertise. He sent out picture postcards of his joint to show its size. His business got much bigger, but he didn't mind a bit. Said Joe, I'll just feed him any kind of food. Poor old Joe, his business started going down. Soon a kid named Sammy opened up across the street. What Sam was serving to the gals, I wouldn't dare repeat. But pretty soon Joe's customers had moved to Sammy's place, because young Sam had a fascinating face. Poor old Joe had the longest face in town. Joe decided there was only one thing to be done. He stood in front of Sam's and questioned ladies one by one. And every gal he questioned would reply without a fuss. You're all through, Joe, now it's Sammy's joint for us. Yes, young Sam has the nicest joint in town. Joe tried and tried to get his business back to its normal state. But his hands were tied, and Sammy's joint was still doing great. Sammy's competition was a hard thing to defeat, 'cause kings and queens had recommended Sammy's joint to eat. But then one morning Sammy's voice had changed from low to high, because old Joe had cut off his food supply. And now old Joe, wise old Joe, lucky old Joe, still has the biggest joint in town.
legend about Chicken on the Hill, how everyone in town would cheer for old Will. Well, here's a little story you probably never heard. The untold tall tale of Wilbur's Chicken Shack. Wilbur had a chicken shack sitting on the hill. Beer by the pint, I could taste the chicken still. I was just thinking about bucket size to go. Man, it's too late now. One day they had a meeting down at the county hall to talk about a place where they could build a shopping mall. I guess they could have put it about any place else, but man, it's too late now. Wilbur built the shack with his own two hands. He was ready for the crew before they come to clear the land. The county hired a foreman to knock the shack down, but man, it's too late now. Wilbur ran a special about a week before. All the chicken you could eat for just walking through the door. He could have made a lot of money, charged the folks half, but man, it's too late now. Everybody took a turn with the sledge. Will was pouring drinks, taking off the edge. The county was talking about changing their plans, but man, it's too late now. By 4 in the morning, shack was just a pile of wood. The taps run dry, but the chicken tasted good. They said he might have saved it if he waited just a week, but man, it's too late now. Wilbur said he wished he could have fixed him up some grub, but man, it's too late now. And I bet you heard the legend about Chicken on the Hill, how everyone in town cheered for old Will.
Fans edging around here now. They'd like to see Willie spread some chicken on the hill. Ball two, no strikes. Here comes the pitch. Cargill swings. There goes a long drive, high and deep to right field. It's going, going, you can. Kiss it goodbye. That little baby went up into the top deck. Fourth row of the seats. There's never been one hit that far before at Three River Stadium.
September 2 years ago, Frank Cash was down on his luck. He'd made a killing at Churchill Downs, but dropped it all at Aqueduct. And that left him somewhat thunderstruck. So he rented a place down on Lonely Street. He was looking for somewhere to hide. The papers showed up at the door every day, and he'd go through the classifieds. Then one morning he turned to the sports page, and he noticed that something was strange. The race results were from the day before, but the football scores were for next week's games. Frank felt scared and a little deranged. but a switchboard lit up in his brain. That Sunday he watched in amazement as the score splashed by on his TV set. Monday morning he ran for the paper. He made it to the phone and began placing bets. He put 10,000 that night on the Jets. 10 grand he didn't have on the Jets. It happened like that the whole season. He couldn't even count all the money he made. He started buying Italian women and shoes, which he kept in a sprawling estate on the lake. And by that I don't mean by the lake, I mean on the lake. He waited all summer for football to start. The maid brought him the paper each day, but all he could find was yesterday's scores. The damn paper had ceased to prognosticate. Then a look of horror crossed his face. It had finally dawned on him, but too late. His rolls hit the pavement at 120, headed for Lonely Street. He rang the bell and a John Walker answered. Frank pressed his luck against the door screen. Frank asked if he still got the paper. John Walker said, "What do you care?" Frank answered, "I need to see the sports section just for a minute." And John Walker stared. Frank tried to push through the doorway. John pulled a real 45. The dog growled barking as the rolls pulled away. John Walker was no longer alive.
The judge looks down through his bifocals. The peers and the jury squirm in their seats. Frank Cash is about to speak. Frank says, "Your Honor, and ladies and gentlemen of the jury, all this has been happening to me because of this guy named T-Bone Burnett. He's been making all this up. And I just want to say, I don't believe in him. In fact, I don't even think he exists. And not only that, but this song is over."
Frank got a suspended sentence. The jury ruled it was self-defense. They ignored his statement on the grounds it didn't make any sense. Frank Cash had had a pretty good year, considering the dizzying chain of events. The paper was never delivered again, but I gave him back all the money he spent. And he married a woman with a lot of soul, and his first son will become president. If you see him, tell him I said hello, and that I'm happy to be able to call him my friend.
Energetic, Phil. Quite good for a machine. Quite a good feel to it. Anyway, this is all about a lad called Craig, who lives down the road from me. And one day, he went swimming. at the local swimming baths. And he was splashing around, doing honey pots, you know, and diving for pennies, as is the wont of young lads, when he suddenly saw this girl sitting on the side of the pool. And I'll tell you more after this instrumental break. Anyway, as I say, Craig noticed this young girl, and he took rather a shine to her. And he thought, now then, how am I going to get introduced here? So he had a think, and then he thought, I know, I'll do honey pots next to her. And it worked, you know. She said, stop it, you know, I'm getting wet here. So he said, I'm sorry. And they got talking, and he said, my name's Craig. And she said, I'm called Sharon. Coming for a swim, Sharon, said Craig. At first, she said no, because she was quite a coy young lass, you know. But eventually, she agreed, and they dived in together. Well, Craig was over the moon.
I'm swimming with Sharon. Swimming with Sharon.
He was. He certainly was. They did about 10 lengths together. And, you know, they were getting on famously. And then Craig said, I'm going to have a dive. And Sharon said, I'll watch. So he climbed up to the top of the 5 metre board. And this is where it starts to go wrong, because he was larking about, you see, showing off. And he took a tumble off the side. And he hit the edge of the, you know, the pool. And he crashed his head, and he's got a fractured skull now.
Swimming with Sharon. Swimming with Sharon.
Ah, but you see, you know, impressing a member of the opposite sex is one thing, but being foolhardy is another. And Craig is in a coma now. He's very poorly. We hope to God he recovers. We'll just have to wait and see, won't we?
Morning, good evening. Good evening, right? I'm sorry, I keep thinking it's Thursday, so good day. Happy weekend to you. KBC here with Attlewood, and tonight we've got another stack of trouble for you. Stuff that, I don't know, I gotta tell you that what I did tonight was I took the fourth set and played it first. We had a lot of just weird crap in the first set, which you just heard, by the way, and lived through, I might add. Congratulations. Started out with a little thing from Van Morrison's Contractual Obligation record. It was called La Mambo. Hey Yaho was a woman named Sheena Scott. No details available, and I probably don't really want to know anyway. You never know. Palaces of Fun was Keith Mitchell. Trini Lopez, probably twirling at this point about that. That was the Blizzard song, something he did for Fresca. Fresca is still alive, but he's not. Tony Randall, Stumbling All Around. You've heard that song in your dream and never knew it had a name or words. And there it is, Tony Randall. Tony Randall was quite the competent vaudeville performer. Yes, he was, in case I have to tell you. After that, Grizz Green. Grizz is, of course, short for grizzled. And that was You Claim Jumping Bum. Got a lot of stuff by him that really is kind of, Let's see, Spike Milligan after that, the Wormwood Scrubs Tango. Wormwood Scrubs is, of course, a prison in Britain. Very gruesome, unfriendly-looking place. You can see it in the movie Shawshank Redemption. It's used for the exteriors there in that movie. So, really gruesome place. Ugly. Speaking of gruesome, that was Johnny Mieskite. Came off of Rhino Records' Worst Records. And I guess so. And then Take Him from Nancy Walker from an album called, not surprisingly, I Hate Men. And actually, I like Nancy Walker. You do, too. She was Rosie, the quicker picker-upper. Remember her? Yeah. Anyway, we got more stuff for you. Just hang on. It gets worse. And I'll be back to explain it.
Well, now, let me think. I've got paper, pen, and ink. And so far, here's my star, she's all ready. And here's what I'll make. Here's a house, and there's a lake. So gather near, and we'll hear from sweet Betty.
Let me put on my little green hat. I'm ready. Listen to the breezes in the trees. Hearken to the grass upon the lawn. Listen to the mice in the pantry. Hearken to the breaking of the dawn. Ooh, heavens above, I'm in love. Hearken to the breaking of the dawn. There's a lake in the park, there's a house by the lake. There's a girl in the house in the park by the lake. And the girl in the house by the lake in the park is the girl in the little green hat. And tonight after 8, that's when he's got a date. When the moon's riding high and the stars light the sky. With the girl in the house by the lake in the park. The girl in the little green hat. There's no water in the lake, no roof upon the house. No trees is in the park at all. But she'll wait beside the lake and he'll be welcome at her house. He'll meet her by the garden wall. There's a ship on the lake, there's a sailor on the shore. The girl in his arms, she's the girl that he adores. So goodbye to the house by the lake in the park. And the girl in the little green hat. There's a storm on the lake. There's a ship in the storm. There's a girl on the ship in the storm on the lake. And the girl on the lake on the ship in the storm is the girl in the little green hat. As the ship starts to dip, she's losing her grip. Every dip makes a tip. Not the girl, but the ship. But the girl on the ship has the pip from the trip. She's as green as her little green hat. She's been sailing quite enough. She's been clinging to the rail. She's dying to be home once more. Ooh, cause the lake is rather rough and the girl is rather pale. She'll be glad to get her feet on shore. Oh, excuse me. So she gave up the ship and the captain and his men for a round ticket trip to his arms once again. Now he's back in the park at the house by the lake with the girl in the little green hat. Gotta go back in the inkwell, toodaloo.
She's done. She's had her fun. And so we'll close the inkwell, yes, the magic one. Here's the cork, so, and that ends our little show. Till my pen draws again our sweet Betty.
Hi.
Well, met a fella named Robin Hood. He used to rob the rich most every chance he could. But you shouldn't get me wrong, because he was no square. With his trusty spit, the West said he could part your hair. His fellows were Little John, another was Allen Dale. 140 strong, together they hit the trail. They would make their way through Brooklyn, fighting crime and sin. Giuliani told them where they should begin. They took from the rich man, and they gave it to the poor man. He had a fear of no man, only for his broad. Her name was Marianne. Hey, here's the switcheroo, Robin Hood's loyal crew. Clinton forgave them all, but here's what they had to do. They became the secret service and were very good. And that ends my little tale of Robin Hood. Play it, boy. Ah, you play like a bunch of fucking crooks. Oh, you're stealing my heart. What'd you do with that load of televisions? That's good. Give it to the orphanage. Good boys. He took from the rich bitch, and he gave it to the poor whore. He had a fear of no man, only for his broad. Her name was Marianne. Now he's the switcheroo, Robin Hood's loyal crew. Clinton forgave them all, but here's what they had to do. They became the secret service and were very good. And that ends my little tale of Robin Hood. Robin Hood, Robin Hood, Robin Hood. Oh, Robin!
Whoa, Robin!
Robin Hood, Robin Hood!
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 Oh, Robin, oh, Robin!
Oh, Robin Bebop!
She wanted to be like everyone else. Now she's all alone in a room by herself.
It started with a party in the back of Ed's cafe. There was dancing and drinking. Most everyone was gay. A stranger that no one knew passed out some cigarettes. Guaranteed we'd get a thrill. A thrill we'd never met. Some said yes and some said no. Susie said she would. They agreed if anyone would get a kick, they knew that she would. The gang all laughed. How brave she was. Yeah, Susie said yes. At first, like it was all in fun. But then Susie wouldn't quit. She had to be among that crowd. So she took another puff. But this was only cigarettes. She wanted other stuff. The stranger knew of something else. Stuff that's hard to get. Susie said she'd try it, 'cause there's nothing stopped her yet. The sweetest girl I ever knew, I slowly watched her fall. Every drug known to man, she now knew them all. She began to lose her friends, then she lost her pride. She didn't need me anymore, so I too stepped aside. And everyone could tell that her twisted mind was full of dope and her body was just a shell. Now in some back room, I know there's a party going on. There may be a stranger who brought some cigarettes along. There may be a Susie who's tempted to try. But if she could see my Susie, she'd know how she'd die.
She wanted to be like everyone else.
Now she's all alone in a room by
A misguided woman with a lovable smile was said to be rowdy, degraded and vile. 'Cause when she was single, she painted the town. But when she got married, that's when she settled down,
down, down, down. Poor Barbara Graham was wild and couldn't be tied. But could she commit murder? And should she really have died, died, died?
A little toy tiger she kept by her side.
She kept by her side.
Her only protector. The day she was tried.
The day she was tried.
She pleaded not guilty. The jury stood by. The judge read the verdict. She was sentenced to die. A lonely young woman, a mother and wife. was sent to San Quentin to pay with her life. We'll always remember through the years that passed how her world was ended in the chamber of gas. Should she really have died?
Lumpy goons. He knew goons would shave them if they found out what died instead. Piece by piece he hid himself till he packed away his head.
This is the boxer Ricky Myers head. It usually sits at the foot of my bed. I take it out each night when I turn out the light. It keeps away the ghouls or so.
Billy bought a mystery box, $39.95, shipped in from Taiwan. Standing in the grocery line, seeing the ad in the Weekly World Press. In bold letters it said, mystery, satisfaction guaranteed. Is it dead? Is it alive? The question marks, they rolled right off the page. Billy and the mystery, Billy and the mystery box. Talked his mother into it, told her it was a kid coming in from Taiwan. Spent a lot of sleepless nights waiting for the box to arrive. Well, it finally came in a great big crate. COD, 3 days late, he signed the papers. Couldn't wait. Smashed his thumb, moving it into the basement. Billy and the mystery, Billy and the mystery box. Billy missed his supper and he didn't answer when his mama called him.
Yoo-hoo.
The worry showed upon her face as she read a book by Judith Krantz. Walked over to the basement door, the light shone underneath onto the floor. She tried the handle and once more, but it was locked from inside. Billy and the mystery, Billy and the mystery box. The house it shook, something crashed. She dropped a book, the lights all flashed. Broke down the door, ran down the stairs. But when she looked, the box was gone and Billy wasn't there.
Ooh.
Grows high in Billy's yard, the house for sale, mama gone to Tulsa. The wind, it whips the paper by, it's the want ads of the Weekly World Press. In bold letters it says, mystery, satisfaction guaranteed. Is it dead, is it alive? The question marks, they rolled right off the page. Billy and the mystery, Billy and the mystery box. Billy and the mystery, Billy and the mystery box.
Debbie and Tommy were like so many kids at Union High. They were going steady, exactly 2 years, 8 months, 11 days, 4 hours, and 32 minutes. That's what Debbie was thinking in her oversized bed, surrounded by pictures of Tommy and herself. She and Tommy at the beach. She and Tommy at the dance. She and Tommy at Christmas. As she dozed off to sleep, the following strange events began to unfold.
Debbie and Tommy agreed with a smile. It was time to get married and walk down the aisle. Debbie's mom and dad were away on a trip, so they told her big sister, who they thought was him.
Joanne, Tommy and I are getting married. Since Mom and Dad aren't here, will you give your approval?
Hello, Mother? Mother, Debbie's going to marry Tommy. She's just left. I was so shocked, I had to call you.
She doesn't know what she's doing. Has she lost her mind?
Debbie and Tommy weren't hurt by this. Determined to share marital bliss, they went over to Donna's, her best friend. On her approval, they did depend.
Oh, Debbie, I don't think you should do it.
Debbie, dear, don't worry. My buddy Jack will stand up for us.
You want me to punch him out?
Debbie had a great idea. She thought of a boy named Ted. Ted? They were once going steady, but she picked Tommy instead.
Ted, will you and Betty come to Centerville with us? It would mean so much to me.
No.
Soon, their plans for elopement became the talk of the school.
Calling all cars, calling all cars. Be on the lookout for Tommy and Debbie. Driving a 57 Ford, candy apple yellow, three-quarter cam, super stock, Chrysler engine, headed towards Centerville.
Tommy and Debbie had no time to lose. To marry each other they did choose. They found a chapel, paid a nursery white. They woke up a minister late at night.
Do you, Tommy, take this girl, Debbie, to be your lawful wedded wife?
Well,
Tommy, did you hear what he said? Tommy? Tommy?
Debbie?
Tommy?
Debbie?
Tommy.
Wake up!
Mom! Oh, Mom, I'll take everyone's advice. I'll wait until after school to get married. Oh, I'll wait. I'll wait, and I'll be sure.
Memories of a high school, memories of a high school, memories of a high school bride. Memories of a high school.
Carolina Beach sure did mess up my life. I lost my home, I lost my car, I lost my sweet, sweet wife. Said I was going fishing, that was all I said. But I didn't go fishing, I went to the beach instead. Never seen so many pretty girls laying in the sand. Fought temptation for a little while, then I took off my wedding band. Carolina Beach, Carolina Beach, I sure did mess up my life. Lost my home, I lost my car, lost my sweet, sweet wife. Walked into the penny arcade, met a little girl named Holly. Looked at the bracelet on her leg. I said, hey man, this girl's Holly by the hand. Said, let's have a beer. She said, lover, I'm with you. I sure could use some cheer. Carolina Beach, Carolina Beach, I sure did mess up my life. Lost my home, I lost my car, I lost my sweet, sweet wife. Holly said, let's play the jukebox, then you can dance with me. Man, we was really living it up, dancing to a song by Jerry Lee. Standing in the door of the juke joint, you'll never guess just who I saw. Sweet, sweet wife, my dear old mother-in-law. Carolina Beach, Carolina Beach, I sure did mess up my life. I lost my home, I lost my car, I lost my sweet, sweet wife.
Oh, that's what he says now, but he'll go back again.
Never was a love so full of woe as for Juliet and her Romeo. Hey, about, hey, hey, would it be so different today? Oh no, you'd hear me say, I love you and love finds a way. Romeo takes sweet talk soon will bring the dawning. Oh, love me tonight, marry me in the morning. Hey, about, hey, hey, whatever would your mother say? How could I change your name today? I love you and love finds a way. With this kiss I take my life. Oh my love, oh my wife. With Juliet and her Romeo, that parting really was such sorrow. Hang about, hey, hey, would we really end up that way? Is it really that hard to say? I love you and love finds a way.
Mm-hmm. my name's John Lee Pettimore. Same as my daddy and his daddy before. You hardly ever saw granddaddy down here. He only come a town about twice a year. He buy 100 pounds of yeast and some copper line. Everybody knew that he made moonshine. Now the revenue man wanted granddaddy bad. He left a holler of everything he had. Before my time, but I've been told he'll never come back from Copperhead Road. Now daddy ran a whiskey in a big black Dodge. Bought it at an auction at the Mason's Lodge. Shots of cannon share painted on the side. Just shot a coat of primer and looked inside. Well, him and my uncle tore that engine down. I still remember that rumbling sound. Then the sheriff came around in the middle of the night. Heard mama crying that something wouldn't right. He's headed down to Knoxville with a weekly load. You can smell a whiskey burning down Copperhead Road.
One thing I like about background music is you can't tell that my wife is cutting the lawn in back of me, can you? Just for the record, I'll be doing my portion of it later, okay? We started that set, Once Upon a Time, with Mae Castell. You know her better as Betty Boop, right? Don't you? Come on, you can read it. Girl in the Little Green Hat, that was, from 1933. We heard from the Playboys and Charge It. I thought that told a pretty simple story. Tale of Robbie Hood was Joe Pesci. Remember Joe Pesci? Yeah. He was singing back in the 70s and a long time, and he's a pro, in case you don't know. All right, Billy Ray after that, the story of Susie. Katie Lee, Insane, our old friend Katie Lee. This did not come off of the Songs of Couch and Consultations set, so makes me think there's more of her stuff out there. I tried to find it, and whoop, it evades me every time. The Ballad of Barbara Graham was Val Norman. Barbara Graham was the subject of the movie I Want to Live, which got Susan Hayward, was it, her Oscar, just so you know. Yeah, she had a story, too. My Uncle in the Goons was Mailbox. Let's see, Billy in the Mystery Box from Hayward Banks. They're still working on that one, I don't know. Memories of a High School Bride was Kim Fowley. There's a story to learn. Well, Kim Fowley, just study him and you're going to see. Let's see, Tex Craddock, Carolina Beach. Watch out for that. My eyes are really pretty bad. I'm sorry, folks. Toby Twirl after that from 1968, Romeo and Juliet. And finish it up with one of my favorite story songs, Copperhead Road from Steve Earle. Okay, so I've got a few more for you, a couple of unexpected tales. And I will be seeing you next week. Oh, no, I won't. I'm not going to be here next week because I will be at a lake in northern Maine with no electricity and no internet. Wish me luck. I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Thank you. fisherman goes home without a hitch. But all he says, the fisherman with his lady bird fish fries in the frying pan. This is so silly, man. Sad as I can be, so I'll sing and play this tune and